Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. And a big hello to all of our listeners in the United Kingdom, which tuned in last week. We really appreciate that. New Zealand, Ireland, and all across North America. As we have some record-setting downloads the last couple of weeks with our program, so we really appreciate you listening. And tell your friends to go into the archives. In fact, I encourage everyone. Today marks 6 months since the terrible tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. And we did a program with Chris France from the band Talking Heads. Did a very special recording session with those children. They sang Over the Rainbow. So we encourage you to go back through our archives, and it would really be great to listen to that today. It was quite a great show, and it was pretty cool. So we want everyone to remember this day. As always, not to be too depressing to start off, Melissa Hovey is our studio producer. Wayne Larson, our technical engineer, and Scott Carney, as always, handles the music. Our guest tonight, we're so excited, all the way from Yakima, Washington, the legend himself, Bob Gimlin, will be with us, part of the Patterson-Gimlin film of Sasquatch Bigfoot that was taken, it's hard to believe, over 40 years ago, and we're going to talk to him about that particular day and his life after the fact, which is pretty fascinating as well. And as always, from his wildlife mecca, the Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, honorable, distinguished, and we're told somewhat regular, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, you know how people are. Good evening, Mr. Batson. Have you got all your feeding chores done for the night?
Well, we just finished them up. In fact, today I was telling Mr. Gimlin before we came on the air that we were putting up fences to protect all the flower beds from our African tortoises. We have three. One weighs in about 130 pounds and is about 3 feet long, so you can imagine the size of that animal. It's kind of like it's a cross between a cow and a bowling ball walking around in our yard eating grass all day.
And that's right, and get out of the way.
Yeah, and get out of the way. So last year, of course, we had that drought here and all the grass died, and that's your usual diet. So they moved on to the flower beds, and my wife Cheryl wasn't a bit happy at all. So this year we're way ahead of the plan, and we've got fences to protect all of our beautiful flowers. The tortoises are happy, and we're happy. And you know what's that saying? As long as the wife's happy, everything's good. You know what I'm trying to say, Dr. Day?
That's right.
This half of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by We Want You Cottages. We know all about them. We had the opportunity to stay there when we were at the Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. In fact, I have on my souvenir T-shirt tonight because of Mr. Gimlin being on the show. And they got a fine facility, folks. If you're a fisherman, Chautauqua Lake. In fact, we were talking earlier to Melissa Hovey that they were the ones that were basically responsible for putting the muskie back on the map in New York. They started a great fishery up there. Now the muskie fishing is absolutely tremendous. And where you want to stay is with the Weimers, Kathy and Peter at We Want You Cottages. It was absolutely great facility, great host. They'll rent you a boat, whatever you want. Head up to New York, Western New York. Their website, www.wewantyou.com. And these underwriters, they're the ones that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for June 13th. Well, let's start out the news tonight with a rare birth in Tennessee.
Oh.
Excuse me. Memphis Zoo says a bonobo ape was born there on May 12th.
Oh, my.
But the sex of the baby is not yet known. Now, as you know, bonobos are very rare in the wild and in captivity and are a high conservation priority. Now, it's the second bonobo born there at the zoo.
Very close to the chimpanzee in appearance, but, you know, I was reading an article in the Smithsonian. It's kind of like people. The females run the whole deal. They're the rulers of the roost. So it's no different than we are. We should be very close to them.
Well, good. I was going to have you describe a bonobo to our listeners who didn't know exactly what a bonobo was. But, yeah, they're pretty much like a chimpanzee, except a lot smarter.
Smarter and, yes, and not nearly as aggressive. And as I mentioned earlier, it's the little woman that runs the deal.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have a confirmed sighting of a great white shark in Massachusetts, and it closes the beaches there at Cape Cod. Yeah, now a lifeguard spotted a dorsal fin about 150 yards offshore. Well, the swimmers were asked to get out of the water, and the surrounding towns were notified. And, Melissa, if you want to see it, it's last reported heading towards Chatham, Massachusetts. So,
well, there you go. Well, you know, Melissa Hovey is quite the shark fan.
That's right.
She loves sharks.
She does love sharks.
Mm-hmm.
I love them in a different way, though.
I think she loves them more than her almost husband, Wayne.
Hmm. Well, we won't get into that tonight. But
no, we won't.
All right, who ordered mutton?
Deadwood,
South Dakota. Wildlife officials plan to introduce up to 40 bighorn sheep into the Grizzly Gulch area in the northern Black Hills.
Very cool. That's neat.
Yeah, they are beautiful animals.
I don't think I've ever been through that area. I know I've been through the Badlands. Is it close to the Badlands, Dr. Day?
Well, it's all bad, and it's all good, too.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. All right, we have good news out of Charleston, South Carolina. The South Carolina Aquarium has obtained its own laser to treat injured sea turtles and other creatures, which will speed up their treatment time. And, you know, it's best to get them in and get them out. Do an outpatient thing on them. Now, the new laser was used for the first time on an injured Kemp's Ridley sea turtle, and it is doing fine.
We need to have Donna Shaver on. It was so responsible for the Ridley sea turtle down in,
South Padre.
South Padre Island in Texas, yes. We need to have her back on.
Yes, it's been a while since she's been on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to hear how those little turtles are doing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now this happens a lot this time of the year. Sevierville, Tennessee, wildlife rehabilitators rescued two juvenile bald eagles whose nest fell 75 feet to the ground during a thunderstorm.
Wow.
Now, I know you've rescued a couple of owls in the past. The same thing has happened to you. And when I was a kid growing up in Kansas, I rescued and rehabilitated a baby blue jay named Albert.
Yeah.
And I was able to turn him loose, and everything was fine.
Well, you know, the size of those nests, they can, you know, they make them bigger every year, the pair that
right.
use the nest. And they can weigh 1,000 pounds.
Yep, and be up to 25 foot across.
My gosh, so the earth probably moved when that thing crashed to the ground.
I imagine so. Now, if you're a penguin fan, head off to New Orleans, Louisiana. Three endangered African penguin chicks are swimming around with adult penguins on display at the aquarium there. Now, this is big news. This is good news. And I love penguins. I've always wanted a penguin, but I can only have one. Now, the gray and white chicks hatched in March and will get their black and white plumage in about a year.
What was that again, Dr. Day?
Easy for me to say. I will say plumage.
Yeah, there you go. We love the penguins.
Yes, we do.
Have had little experience. The only thing I can tell you about the penguin is the Indianapolis Zoo, when they first built their penguin exhibit, their air filtration system that they had, pump the air from the penguin area into where the people viewed the penguins. So it wasn't, with all that fish, it wasn't good.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's inside news, by the way.
Yeah, and I see the problem with having a penguin as a pet, most of them have to have a dust-free environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to come by. All right, now here's an interesting story out of Genesee, Wisconsin. A fire at a game farm and hunt club destroyed a barn that housed hundreds of pheasants. But an update on the sports club's Facebook page said 600 pheasants were missing.
They're loose?
Well, they think somebody's taken the 600 pheasants and then set the barn on fire.
Oh.
Oh,
now, where do you hide 600 pheasants?
My God. Now, that's a criminal, I'm telling you right now.
Yep. Now, did you hear about Australian swimmer Chloe McArdle?
No, I did not.
Well, she pulled out of her swim from Cuba to Florida after she was stung by a jellyfish yesterday.
Oh, my.
Now, she was only 11 hours into her swim when the jellyfish stung her. Now, she would have been the first to swim the 100 miles with no shark cage.
Could she not find anyone that would urinate on her jellyfish injury?
We won't go into that, but the good news is the jellyfish is okay and should reach Florida sometime tomorrow night. All right, the local news. Here's the local news. 375 rabbits were removed from a home on the far south side.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to say any more about that.
Oh, my gosh, I can't even imagine. How many? 375?
375 rabbits, yes.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. All right, now, before we get into the wild world facts tonight, The Old Farmer's Almanac says the next 10 days are the best for fishing this month, so get out there if you can.
Okay.
All right, get ready for the Wild World Facts tonight.
I'm ready.
The whale shark has over 400 teeth, and each tooth is only about 3 millimeters long.
Once again, Dr. Henry Day, man.
Now, I wanted to ask you before we go tonight from the
yes.
Wild World News, how's your hummingbird coming along?
Well, I could tell you a story this evening about hummingbirds, which it's never happened to me before. Would you like to hear it?
Please.
Well, usually about 7 a.m. in the morning, our baboon gets me up because it would like a bottle of milk. So while I'm in there warming up its milk and preparing its formula, I live out in the middle of nowhere, so I'll go out and as we say, Mother Nature calls. In my backyard. For some reason, the last 3 days, as I'm relieving myself, a hummingbird has been coming in and circling. The stream is being released around and around. Dr. Day, it has happened the last 3 days.
Built-in
not
camera.
That's the kind of story I was expecting.
Can anyone in your staff explain that to me?
Well, hummingbirds do like mist of water. They do like, so yeah, maybe he was thinking about a golden shower, I guess.
And
I'm sorry I brought all that up because the whole thing was that I was going to tell you that hummingbirds consume half of their weight in food daily.
Oh, I know. Oh, yes. When we have lots of them already. They show up April 15th and here all summer, and I have to get a loan for sugar to keep them happy.
Oh, I know. I've seen them out there. It's nonstop.
Oh, my gosh. And they're aggressive. They're not nice. They're like little flying ice picks.
Oh, yes. Yes,
so
well, you're
going to
have to be more careful in the morning, aren't you?
Absolutely, we do.
All right, well, let's get on with this. We're wasting time tonight. It takes a lobster about 7 years to grow to 1 pound.
Oh.
Yes, now that's why they taste so good.
I'll bet.
The last fact of the night, the Lead Jungle, located in Omaha, Nebraska, is the world's largest indoor rainforest. And that's the Wild World News for June 13th.
Well, once again, a fantastic job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, the crossroads of America. We'd also like to tell everyone about our brand-new project brought on by Shelley Leibowitz and SRI Records. It's called the Wild World Music Collection. Listen to these artists: Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, Waylon Jennings, Freddie Fender, Hank Williams, Elvis Presley. It goes on and on and on. A wonderful download. All you have to do is go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and make a donation of $15 or more, and we will send you that download with over four CDs worth of music. It's an amazing deal. In fact, in a couple of weeks, Shelley Leibowitz with SRI Records in Hollywood, California, is going to be on the program, and for 1 hour we're going to feature music from the download and encourage everyone to help contribute to our wild animal family and the work we do in schools. They make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Roger and Bob rode out that day till that log jam got in their way. They got lucky on the creek that day. Oh, they got lucky when she walked away. Roger and Bob rode out that day. Roger and Bob were gone a week, right in the forest around Bluff Creek. They shot some film of a Bigfoot there. She walked on two legs, was covered in hair. Oh, Roger and Bob had quite a week. Got a call on the telephone. Roger and Bob stopped by his home. They told him about their good luck. Roger said, "I filmed that son of a buck." Oh, Al got a call on the telephone. John and Renee came down to see what those guys saw on Bluff Creek. They made maps of the site complete, making a clearing walk in Patty's feet. Oh, John and Renee came down to see. Bob Fitzmer came out to cast those tracks left by Patty first and last. They showed movement of a flexible foot. Ah, they weren't pretty, but were worth a look. Oh, Bob Fitzmer came out to cast. Russia and the UK. He showed
noticed there to see what they had to say. The Londoners look down their nose. The Russian scientists look very close. Rene took the film to Russia and the UK. That film got shown on the TV. Got written up in magazines like Argosy. Made an impression on our conscious mind. It made an impression of the lasting kind. Well, the film got shown on the TV. Roger and Bob rode out that day. Their lives changed in every way. So did ours, because we got to leave. I live in 6 foot walking, tall and free. Oh, Roger and Bob went down in history.
Tom Yamarone, our guest tonight, he's truly a legend. I call him the Elvis of Bigfoot World. Bob Gimlin joins us tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, it's great to have you on the program again. The last time we had a chance to chat, we were with John Green. It's truly a historical evening. As we pretty much went through the entire deal that happened in October 1967. And I have to ask you right off the bat, did you think at that moment you were sitting on the back of that horse and you watched this thing along this creek bed, that this would still be going on some 40 years later?
No, definitely not. There were so many negative years there that I was wishing it'd just go away.
I know.
But then in 2003, I attended a conference in Willow Creek, California, with John Green and Dmitry Vanoff from Russia and some very important people in the field at that time. Dr. Milgram was there, and Jimmy Chelcutt was there, and the list goes on and on. You know, the ones that I think, you know, really good in this field of the Bigfoot and phenomenon. But anyway, that got me started again, involved in what little bit that I'm able to attend now at my age. You know, I'm kind of getting. My energy level is not quite as good as it was a few years ago, but I'm still working at it, pretty much. And Tom and I, if it wasn't for Tom Yamron to be able to go with me and do things, you know, I probably couldn't even couldn't fly or couldn't do a lot of different things because I don't do I don't do computers or anything in airports. And in fact, I like to fly as once I'm in the plane, but getting there is what I'm not really fond of.
And speaking of Tom Yamarone, we have a special guest on the line tonight, Larry. You know who it is.
Tom Yamarone from Northern California?
Yes, sir.
Hey, that's great. That's great. Hello, Tom.
Oh, we're trying to get him in.
Oh, we lost him already.
No, well, he should be there. He should be there.
Tom?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, there he is.
Hey, I could hear you.
Oh, good.
Hey, yeah, great. Great to. Hey, good to hear you, Larry. And hi, Melissa. And hello, Bob.
Hi, Tom.
And Tom, hey. We need to introduce you to our, I don't know what she was calling, but Dr. Henry Day is a part of our program.
Oh. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening. Good evening, Henry, if I may call you that. I heard you speaking earlier about the shark sighting off the coast of Massachusetts and the bonobos. So I was able to hear that. I'm out actually right now with my family are all in town for my daughter's graduation, but I'm able to take a little break here and step outside.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I have to say, we were at the Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo the end of April, and when Tom Yamarone brought in Bob Gimlin to that arena, to the very first event, and I think Melissa and Wayne will attest to this, it was like Elvis Presley had arrived.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's why that. We'll come. That's why we'll call Tom the Elvis of Bigfoot then, okay?
hey, wait a minute.
I want to tell Dr. May that I really appreciated his input on this about the different things, his events that happened. That was very interesting. Thank you very much, Dr. Henry May.
You're welcome.
Well, we don't give him too many kudos because we're just afraid he'll spontaneously combust one day. We'll never have him again, so try to keep him a little bit sedated if we can at all
times. Okay.
But,
all right. That's you guys' job over there, all right.
Well, don't you think, you know, so much of what we do in our search for evidence and search for Bigfoot and Sasquatch, I mean, a lot of that depends on the what's going on in the natural world and understanding nature and the natural world. So, yeah, this is all, in some ways, you know, obviously it goes hand in hand.
Well,
definitely
I've always said that if I saw one walk off of a spaceship, I am done. I am not interested in any aliens. I have no interest. And not unless it's another living wild animal on this planet. My interest is over. In fact,
yeah.
I think I may have mentioned when we had a great evening one night in Tom and Bob's cabin, just chatting, and my interest started when Jim Fowler had told me about being in Russia, and the Russian guides, all they wanted to talk about was Bigfoot. They were trying to go into an area and film Russian brown bears, but they're more interested in Bigfoot because they had seen something in that part of the world, which is very similar to what's been reported in Northern California, what Roger and Bob had filmed, Roger Patterson, of course, and that's been reported for all these years. And you know what amazed me so much, Bob, about the conference, that you stated that the first showing of the film, which occurred up in Vancouver, am I not mistaken?
Yeah, that's true, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah, and you did not attend, and people said, well, why? Well, you had to go back to work. You actually had a job.
Yes, this is true.
And that when you actually saw the film, you were disappointed.
I was. Because, because it didn't, you know, it just wasn't as plain as what I saw with my two blues, you know. So I thought, well, God, you know, I saw a lot more of that than the film showing. So I just wasn't that impressed with it, you know, and everybody else was talking about it. I thought, oh, well, you know, I mean, I wish they could see what I saw.
And I've always said, go ahead, please.
Well, I was kind of through there. But, you know, I mean, then I realized that there's a whole difference, and, you know, by seeing it through your own eyes, than a camera on film, say, and so didn't take long to realize that I had a little bit of an advantage there over the film.
And can you not believe it's 40 years since, or over 40 years now, there has no one, even with the modern technology that we have, that has come up with anything better.
This is true, and I'm real happy about that. And, you know, and I guess Mr. Bill Munns is doing some incredible work with it at this point in time. I haven't had a chance to talk to Bill lately, but I plan on next week being able to visit with him some down in Portland and talk to him about what he's really doing with the film. But I understand that he's doing some incredible work with it.
Well, for those who may not know, Bill Munns is an incredible Hollywood monster builder and creator of some great costumes and effects. And if anyone could build a duplicate of what Roger and Bob saw in October 1967, he's the guy that could do that.
Yeah. I might say yes, Bill's work is hang on, and we'll see when his project is finished, but from the few talks I've seen, one last October, he will show to those who question whether or not that the film subject was somebody in a suit. He'll show definitively that what was available in 1967 does not compare. And then we all know that. It's a more natural moving film subject. But and then you get into the things that John Green had pointed out, the limb ratios, and Bill is able to, again, show that as well. So that, you know, ultimately, and the same reason why we did the Yakima Roundup in 2009 is to finally, give these guys give them some acclamations for what they achieved there. You know, let's honor their achievement, which really has never been done over time, you know.
Well, what did they decide, Bob, was the actual height of the animal that you saw that day?
Well, last time I talked to Bill, he said it measured 7'3¾". So, you know, all of these people talk about being in a suit and all that. I think the one particular fellow is not even quite 6 foot tall. So, you know, I mean, it proves right there that there's some false statements there and a whole lot of whatever you want to call it. I don't really like to put a name on it or brand it with anything special, but we know that there is somebody there's people out there that would like to make a name for themselves or do something. I don't really know what the whole idea for the different statements that they make and trying to get a suit made that looks similar to the film footage. And also the stride and whatever else they're working on at the time or did work on up here. So that's what Mr. Munns told me last time I talked to him, that's what the actual height measurement of the creature was, 7'3¾" tall.
And what I've always presented whenever I've given a talk on the subject with my limited knowledge is that here you and Roger are sitting around deciding to do, decide to do this hoax, and you get this costume constructed, and you're going to put a guy in it, and you say, well, that suit looks pretty good, but you know, Roger, we really need to put a couple of breasts on it.
Well,
this doesn't add up.
To be plumb honest with you, Larry, when I first saw that creature, you know, I could see that there was something rather large there, but I didn't know what a male or female was supposed to look like.
Sure.
So I never, you know, never even thought about a female. Everything was happening so rapidly, and, you know, all I was thinking about was this is one very, very hard, large creature out there walking away just like a human being. Mm-hmm. And so then when they started talking about it being a female because of the large mammary glands, and I thought, well, yeah, they're there, but, you know, you see some men with some pretty good-sized chests on them, but not like that. But anyway, that's kind of when I just accepted the fact that they are probably a little bit more alert on the different things than I am, and then I'm not sure whether it was Bill or who it was said that you could see how the movement was as she walked, as it walked, mm-hmm. and I'll call it she because that's what they branded her and also named it Patty. And but so they say, well, they said there are the people who ever said this. I'm not sure. I thought it was Bill, but maybe not. Sometimes I forget, and I don't know why. You know, but anyway, that if anybody would be in a suit, they wouldn't have that kind of movement as they walked, you know.
Sure.
And of course, we all are aware of what females look like when they walk because, being male, we observed them all of our lives. So consequently, we definitely know what they look like when they're walking. So I'll rest my case.
Yeah, you do rest your case. Our guest tonight, Bob Gimlin, a special guest from Northern California, Tom Yamarone, great songwriter of Bigfoot tunes. Hey, we're going to take a short break. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat Heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, not.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with our very special guest, Bob Gimlin from the state of Washington, also Tam Yamarone from Northern California. We want to remind everyone to go to our archives. We've got lots and lots of shows with some great guests and encourage you to check out the archives of Larry Batson's Wild World. We also want to thank McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. That's God's country, everybody. If you've never been to the western part of our United States, I thoroughly encourage you to visit Colorado, the village of Estes Park. And if you want to stay at a truly spectacular resort, McGregor Mountain Lodge on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park, you'll have bighorn sheep in your backyard, elk. It's truly amazing, and it's you get a spiritual feeling when you go to those mountains and breathe that fresh mountain air. No better place to do that than McGregor Mountain Lodge. Their website, www.mcgregormountainlodge.com. They're one of the underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Roger and Bob rode out that day,
until that logjam got in their way. They got lucky on the creek that day. Oh, they got lucky when she walked away. Roger and Bob rolled out that day.
Sample of Tom Yamarone in his classic song, Roger and Bob Rode Out That Day. That's great, Tom. I have to tell you, I had more fun jamming with you guys. So it's truly a world I fear.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you came up and did that, Larry, because when I was back there at Lake Chautauqua, what was great was, these are simple songs. I like that they tell the story and some of the more famous accounts of Bigfoot stories. But I'm always glad to play with anybody. And I'm glad, you know, when we had the two nights to rehearse with Todd Prescott from Ontario. So big hellos to Todd. And, yeah, I'm glad you came up there and played harmonica on the song about Jerry Crew. Because, anyway, that's just always a blast for me to play where people hopefully will appreciate these songs. Thank you.
It was such a great environment, the whole 3 days that we spent up there. And I have to tell everyone right now, and this will embarrass him, I'm sure, but really? When you meet Bob Gimlin and he talks to you and he looks you in the eye, he is so genuine, he's so honest that I believe he could sell ice chest to an Eskimo.
Oh, yeah. Well, talking to me? You talking to me? Yeah, well, of course. That's the thing about Bob that impresses everybody is sincerity. And something until you meet him, you won't know unless you take somebody's word for it. But, yeah, I mean, I've been... just real honored, and it's been a real pleasure to have known Bob so long, you know.
Would be. Who were some of the top people that you had a chance to meet, Bob, when you've been doing this for this 40 crazy years since Bluff Creek?
Is Bob still on with us?
Did we lose Bob?
We shouldn't have.
Bob.
Okay, let me try to get him back. Hold on.
Well, we'll explain. Tom and I can talk about this because it was just phenomenal. I mean, when he walked into the room, it was like Elvis had arrived, and it was just a fantastic, fantastic 3 days. One of the most interesting things that I can remember him talking about, some of the things that occurred after the fact, because he hasn't completely given up the Bigfoot research thing. I mean, he still gets a chance to get out in the wild and mingle with the folks.
Right. He does. He gets out there in his area. There's places in the Cascades, and there's local researchers that stay in touch with him. And he's always interested to know as well what is going on in other areas. So for us to go back like we did in April, it gave him afforded him that opportunity to speak with there were several people there doing research in the Allegheny National Forest, and you folks from Ohio, Indiana. So he does like to stay up to date with what's going on.
And I think
we do have Bob back.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I got to apologize to you guys. I laid the phone down to take a drink of my tea, picked it back up, and with my thumb and hit the off button. So, hey, I owe you one.
No, you don't, Doc, because we have to confess we were talking about this just the other day, Bob and Tom, that Dr. Day, he'd had a rather hard day, and we're doing the program, and we could hear snoring sounds. We realized that we had lost Dr. Day.
Well, Hey, let me tell you, I can understand Dr. Andre Day, but I didn't have such a bad day, so I'll hang on this time, all right, guys?
I was lucky. Yeah.
If I missed out on something, well, then I'll just have to catch up here after a while.
Well, we were building up your ego a little bit, I think, because I was telling everyone, that anyone that has the opportunity to meet you, you're most genuine, honest, and you look into your eyes, and as I told Tom, you could sell an icebox to an Eskimo, Bob Giblin.
Well, thank you. I mean, by golly, I might go into selling here someday then. If you guys keep building me up like that, I might have to.
Well, you've been known to sell a horse or two every once in a while, huh?
Well, yes, that's true. And, yes, that's very true. Thank you.
Yeah, similar tactics. You know what they say about a good old horse trader, boy?
Well, I've had a little experience on that subject, you know. I don't do as much trading as I do riding, but, you know, it all kind of fits hand in glove. Go ahead with the program. I don't want to be holding up anything here.
You're not holding up anything.
All right,
you are the program.
Hey, I'm going to have to excuse myself and say I should get going here and get back in with my family. But thank you for having me on, and it's a real pleasure to talk with you again, and Larry and Melissa and Dr. Day. Thanks. I hope to meet you someday. And it was wonderful seeing you back there in Lake Chautauqua, New York.
Well, we want to thank you so much for the music that you contributed tonight. It added so much to the program, and I encourage everyone to check out Tommy Amarone. You have a website. Tell everyone.
I do. BigfootSongs.com. It's plural. Bigfoot Songs. And, in fact, that song, Roger and Bob, I'm so proud to announce that it's in a new, a small independent Hollywood movie called Willow Creek. Written and directed by Bobcat Goldthwait. And it's showing at film festivals. It just showed in Dallas on Sunday night, and we got to see it up in Arcata on May 31st. And it's a really good movie. It's fictional, but the man and woman in the movie, young people in their 20s, they pursue information trying to get back to where the film was made. It's really all about the Patterson-Gimlin film in that way. So,
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tom.
Okay, well, guys, have a great rest of the interview, and I will talk with you soon.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
You know, Willow Creek ought to give you, you ought to be the honorary mayor of Willow Creek, Bob. You basically put that little town on the map.
Well, you know, I tell you, Al Hodson's been a great. Have you guys ever been able to meet Al Hodson?
I've talked to him on the phone.
Yeah, a great guy. Yes, a great guy, you know, and we were lucky enough to, I was lucky enough to meet Al down there when Roger and I were down there on that particular time. And so then I've been able to visit with him a few times since then. You know, of course, in 2003, he was the one that coordinated that conference down there in Willow Creek, you know, that got me going again with the Bigfoot phenomenon. You know, before that, you know, I took so much negative part of that, negative things about it, that I was just kind of fed up with it and didn't really want to have anything much to do with it anymore, you know.
I'll bet.
And so, you know, I was really happy that Al did coordinate that conference, convention, or whatever you want to call it, you know. And it worked out really well, and I realized that there was 200-plus people that was seriously concerned and interested in it. And so, and there was a good panel, a great panel there. And, of course, John Green and the ones that I mentioned were on the panel speaking. And I think they're all together, including myself, I think there was 12 speakers there at that time in 2003. And so that got me back on track again as far as my concern that that there was people that was seriously interested in it. So I've made as many of them as I possibly could since then. And, you know, even I didn't make the Ohio one this year. I just couldn't make that one. And there's a couple of them in Oregon I'm probably not going to be able to get to. I'd like to, but, you know, I've got really good friends and stuff that's in the horse showing business. And,
sure.
And they kind of depend on me to back them up and support them as far as the show goes. And, you know, the one little girl is, I call her my granddaughter. She really isn't biologically related to me, but her mother grew up with me, with her granddad and I riding with her. And so this went on, and then she did real good at the Youth World Show 2 years in a row in Oklahoma City. And anytime you take a little farm girl, we call it, and head to Oklahoma City and compete with a worldwide competition with some real, real expensive horses. She did well. She's a champion in my book, okay. But anyway, we'll go on to some other things here. I could talk about them kids all night.
Well, that's what you have to do. I mean, because that's your true love. I mean,
Oh yeah, you know, and I see. When I'm able to attend these shows, like Medford, Oregon will be the next one, and Las Vegas, and probably Oklahoma City in the fall. But you see some incredible horse flesh, and you realize the amount of money that's spent on these shows and what it takes to get there and how many vehicles it wears out running to these different places to finally get to a show of that magnitude.
Well,
but anyway, we've got a lot of things probably that you'd rather hear about than that I do. And if somebody wants to hear about how I got involved in the Bigfoot with Roger, I'd sure be glad to talk a little bit about that.
Well, why don't we talk about that? Because we did cover our first program, but we have so many new listeners from England and that have heard so much about this phenomenon. Why don't you tell people exactly what developed between you and Roger in the creation of this film?
Okay. All right. That's good. That's fine, because I really would like to talk about that a little bit. Roger and I had been friends for a good many years. You know, we knew each other back in the late 50s at the rodeos. And so Roger seemed like a really honest, responsible person, and just a nice guy to be around, you know, good advice and so forth. And he's also kind of he was a health conscious person and a gymnast and so forth. And, of course I didn't know him back when he was a gymnast, but, Roger was an extremely strong, and his upper body as for his size. Roger wasn't a very big guy. I think he was only about 5'3" or 5'4" or something like that, and probably didn't weigh over 160 pounds, but he was extremely strong in his upper body. So and he talked about different things, how he got that way, and naturally I was concerned about anybody that stayed fit and in great physical shape. And so then Roger had come by my place, and of course I rode quite a few colts in the mountains at that time. I'd go up and ride to get horses broke for could ride in the mountains, and I'd go past Roger's place. He lived back about 40 miles back towards the mountains, and I'd go past his place, and I'd stop to visit with him, and he'd say, "Well, Bob, let me load up the horse in your rig and ride with you." And I'm sorry, "Sure, Roger, go ahead." So he had little tape players, little cassette players, you know, and he'd play me these tapes at different testimonials of people that had, I'm not sure they were sightings, but they talked about the footprints, and Roger would show me plaster casts. Well, at that particular time, I didn't really care that much about it, because I just didn't have time to get interested, involved in it. And so he'd keep doing this, and I thought, well, there's got to be something out there that people are talking about. These plaster casts Roger is showing me of various sizes. And so then he brought a book over to me that Dr. Ivan Sanderson had published back in, I think, 57, 56 or 57. Mm-hmm. So in my spare time, I read in that book some, and so I got interested, semi-interested anyway, and got to the point where I thought, well, you know, I'd seen these plaster casts and things, and I would like to, I'd like to learn a little more and see a little more if it was possible. And so Roger and I went and rode over to Mount St. Helens area and didn't see anything, of course, and that was a Labor Day weekend. I had a long weekend. It started raining really, really hard over there, so we came on back home. I went back to work, and Roger went on up to his place, I guess. I really don't know where he went. But anyway, a few days later, probably a week later, Roger come flying in my driveway really excited. He said, Bob, they found a whole bunch of footprints down there in California up around Willow Creek where they were starting to build, put logging roads in, blade logging roads in, and they put a tank in there. And when they came back on Tuesday morning after Labor Day weekend, there was three different sizes of footprints there. Well, he wanted me to take him down there right away, and I said, well, Roger, I can't do that. I got a job, and I got critters. I got animals and cows and horses to take care of, and my wife worked on a job, regular job. So anyway, I said, well, I went and talked to my boss, and I was hot roofing at that time for my regular job.
Oh, man.
And he said, well, yeah, Bob, if you want, he said, it's starting to slow down, and then September and October will be a little slower, and then when the weather breaks, gets worse in November and so forth, it's going to be some slack time. And of course, I didn't have the seniority enough to hold a job when it got a little slack. So he said, go ahead and take off. Well, I figured it'd only be a week or so, and that's what I told him. So I took Roger down there to Northern California to see these footprints that they'd talked about. Well, it had also rained up and down the whole West Coast, I assume, because the footprints were, they weren't, they were just big globs in the mud, big depressions in the mud, you know,
right.
Depressions in the mud. So I thought, well, God, I come all the way down here to see these footprints because I had never seen a footprint other than the plaster cast that Roger showed me. So anyway, while we were down there, well, we just started riding. I think it was either the last day of September or the first of October. I never did really decide which one of those it was. But anyway, so we rode for the next 3 weeks down there, just all over them mountains, and never saw anything. And so I was ready to just give it up and come on back home. And so we decided to make one more really trip way back in an area where we had talked about going but never got back there. It was about 15 miles back in. Mm-hmm. So we got the horses up. That was about noon when we left out. We was going to stay all night way back in to see if something, you know, some kind of footprints or anything, any kind of evidence
sure.
that we could gather.
Yeah.
Well, about 3 miles from where we... Anyway, I'll finish this up. So about 3 miles from where we were camped, as a creek came down, we made a turn around a downfall tree where the creek had rooted itself around that, and there the creature stood right alongside the creek. So that's when this all blew up, or the horses blew up, and Roger's horse had a. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's how this film footage started. So that's kind of how it happened. I'm kind of rushing along, but anyway, that's I'm all through here, I guess. According to the 60 seconds is up, I'm pretty sure. And thank
well,
you for listening.
We can
me.
Run over just a little bit, but like I've told people that have watched the film footage, that camera that Roger had used is very similar to my father's camera when he would make films on vacation. And at the start of the film, it's rather jittery because Roger's running.
Roger's running across the creek.
Yeah.
See, we were on the, what we'd call the east side of the creek, and the creature was standing on the west side of the creek.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got whole vacations, family vacations at home that look like that part.
Oh, do you? Well, that's why that looks so bad. And then Roger run up this bank and kind of stumbled and went down on his elbows. And then he got up and stabilized himself on a log that was kind of buried partially in the sand. And then, of course, she was walking away, pretty rapidly getting away. And so Roger wanted to relocate and get a better view, so he asked me if I would cover him. Well, I knew I couldn't do anything. I was still sitting on my horse, holding him, keeping him from running away, or, you know, just holding him there, keeping him there. So I rode across the creek, and so I stepped down off the horse, and I pulled my 30-06 rifle out of the scabbard because I didn't know what to expect. This great, huge, big thing. I didn't know whether to turn around and just, you know, come back. And I never raised the rifle up to shoot or anything. I just held it. And that's that film footage. That's the frame that everybody, or that a lot of people are using, where she's turning her head and that arm is coming back. And
she was looking at you.
She turned to look at me as I got down off the horse.
Oh, my.
But never stopped. Never stopped. Kept right on walking. And but it turned its body, its torso towards me and looked at me with that arm back, and it just kept right on going, kept right on walking, you know, at the same speed it was walking. It didn't slow down.
How did you guys sleep that night?
We didn't.
I was gonna say.
We didn't, and some people checked this out. Well, Roger did go to sleep, but after we went over and Roger sent the film on to Yakima, airmailed it, I guess. I took him to the airport, and we're so tired. I took a nap in the truck while he was inside, and then we went back, and we got back there late at night, and there was a big full moon, just a full moon. And we talked about this for hours, and then Roger finally went off to sleep, and I dozed off, and then about 3 in the morning, I could hear raindrops on the canvas on top of the truck, on the cover over the back of the truck. And so I woke up Roger, and I said, Roger, it's starting to rain. I had got some cardboard boxes down at Al Hodson's Variety Store to cover these tracks up, so that people could view them. And Roger had called some Canadian people that had track dogs that was going to come down, and I figured they got to start from somewhere, so I wanted to make sure these tracks were covered up so they could see them. Well, when I put the boxes outside when we came back that night, and it started raining, and these boxes, when I looked at them, they were just soggy messes. So I saddled a horse, and I rode up there in the dark, and started pulling bark off dead trees there the best I could to cover these tracks. And that was what saved a bunch of them to be able to get plaster cast at Titmus and Rene Duhendon and the ones that went down there.
Mm-hmm.
But the track dogs couldn't make it because had mudslides, and it started raining. It rained all the rest of that day, and it was another story trying to get up out of there with that truck.
Well, I remember little creek. Telling about that, talking about
it
that
was,
in New York.
Yeah, right. I talked about it there. And, you know, the creek that was about 18 inches deep, by the time we got ready to get out of there, it was over 3 foot deep and 14 foot wide. And this was just a little creek that ran down through there. Probably 6 foot wide at the most, because I used to go bath in it, and you know, when I'd come in, because it was warm down there that year in October, and of course October 20th, you know, your days aren't very long, so we just had a limited amount of time to get plaster cast made in of the film footage or the cast of the creature itself, and also take pictures of it. And then I did some things by getting up on a stump and jumping off alongside the tracks as close as I could with a cowboy boot on with a heel to see how deep I could go. And I weighed 175 pounds at that time, and jumping off that stump at about, well, the stump was between 3 and 4 feet. So I jumped off and hit with 1 foot, and I couldn't even start to make a track. And I also rode the horse past, and the horse weighed 1,200 pounds. And I rode the horse fairly close to the tracks. And Roger took the camera then and took pictures of what the depth of the footprint of the creature compared to the horses and mine were. And of course, the horse track wasn't even as deep as the creature's track.
You know, you guys did some pretty amazing things after that was filmed.
Well,
thanks to do that.
You know, you just kind of do what you have to do as fast as you can, and because, like I say, it's a limited amount of time. You know, start getting, you know, and down in the mountains there, it started getting not dark, but by 5:30 it was starting to get a little dust. And I think, you know, we were quite a ways back in there. We were 30-some miles back in. Well, I had this one-ton Chevy truck, dually, and by the time we got down to Willow Creek, to Al Hodson's, I think it was around 6 or 6:30, and then by the time we got over to that little town, I forget. There's two of them towns, Wairika and Eureka, down there, and I always get them mixed up. But anyway, the one that we went to is the closest. You know, it was getting later, and by the time we got back up to where our camp was, I think it was 12 o'clock at night or somewhere close to that. So, you know, we probably talked for 2 hours, and then Roger went to sleep, and I kind of dozed off. Then when I woke up, it was raining on the canvas on the back of the truck. So I don't think I really ever really did go sound asleep. I just kind of was napping.
Yeah,
but I went ahead. Roger was sleeping, but I went ahead and got up and kicked his feet or shook him and told him to wake up. We had to go do something about the tracks, and he said, "It isn't gonna rain, Bob. This thing." He said it was clear last night when we come back. I said, "Yeah, but it's starting to rain now," and then it started picking up. You know, and of course, hitting on the canvas, it don't take long. You realize it's raining pretty hard.
Oh yeah.
So that's when I made the decision that I had to get up there and do something about them tracks.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did.
Well, you know, I always get kind of irritated when somebody calls it the Patterson film, because that would have never happened and all the things surrounding it, like saving the tracks and the events going up to it, providing the horses, if it wasn't for Bob Giblin. I mean, you were such an important part of that. Even today, doing basically the public relations and giving Roger Patterson the reputation that the man deserves.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I do feel that way. I feel that way about it, but it doesn't bother me that they call it the Patterson film. But, you know, there are some people call it the Patterson-Gimlin film, and of course, I have a big smile on my face when I hear that. And it just don't bother me that some people call it the Patterson film.
Well, how's that smile when I call it the Gimlin Patterson film?
Thank
that's
you.
The way it's
thank you.
The alphabetical order.
Yeah, that's
all
great.
Right. Appreciate that a lot.
Bob, it has been such a pleasure. I have to tell you, when we had a chance to meet in New York personally, that we've talked on the phone many, many times, and when I shook your hand and I looked you in the eye, and I told you, you do not realize how important this is to me. Because,
well, Larry,
it's
go ahead, Larry.
It was a very emotional moment, because I have to tell you, I've been involved with this since I've been about 18 years old, and now I'm 60 plus, and
just a kid.
I feel like a kid, and to have an opportunity to meet essentially one of my heroes And to be the man that I thought he would be was just, it was mind-blowing. I mean, it was one of the great weekends of my life, I will always say.
Well, thank you, Larry. Let me tell you, I'd been wanting to meet you for quite some time. And it was just equally as rewarding for me as you're saying it was for you, I'm sure, or maybe more. Because, you know, for you to bring all of the, I'm going to call them critters because I'm not sure what I should say. But anyway, that was really, really something to have you there and to meet you and to know that the gentleman that you are and the things that you're doing with the wildlife program, it is great. It's great. And I just hope that you can continue to do that and it gets bigger and better all along. And
well,
to have me on the talk show, I really do appreciate that. And, of course, I think everybody appreciates, somebody talking, telling them that they're okay. And I always wanted to be that person that was honest and say it like it is and tell it like it is.
Well, to tell you, Dr. Day, we had a private reptile show for all the Bigfoot people here, there in my cabin, and it was
that was
fun.
Great, Larry. That was great. That was great.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Larry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Excuse me.
No, you didn't. You didn't. We had Bob Gimlin holding tarantulas and boa constrictors and we were lying up the...
Enjoyed every bit of it. I enjoyed every bit of it.
We had such a good time.
It was great. It was great. And Larry, it was such a pleasure to visit with you and meet you in person and just know that you're the guy that I figured that you would be by talking to you on the phone, you know.
Yeah.
And so this was, I tell you, I really, that was the highlight of my year. Well, the highlight of a long time to be there and have you there with your spiders and your snakes and all of the things that you had there. And I know it was an effort to get them down there, but at that lake where Peter and that's a great place, you know, to be. And we had it was great, and I was so happy that Peter had us come back there.
Yeah, we are too. What a show, Dr. Day.
I think Bob might be the bravest person I know because I'm not sure if I would have rode back into the woods at nighttime after seeing that creature.
Well, Dr. Day, it's sure a pleasure to hear your experiences, too.
Well, thank you.
Well, we'd like to thank Bob Gimlin. Next week on the show, it's going to be tough to match this one. Record producer Neil Norman, he's put together a classic collection from the band The Seeds of the 60s and 70s. We're going to talk to him about that from Los Angeles, California. But what a great show tonight with Bob Gimlin and from Yakima, Washington. Like a big thank you to Melissa Hovey, Wayne Larson, and Dr. Day.
Good evening. It was a great show. Thank you, Tom, too, for joining us tonight.
Oh, yeah, and Tom Yamarone. Folks, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio's Larry Batson's Wild World. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.